Walter White guest stars on Murder, She Wrote, Martin Lawrence rules TV and theaters, and Barry Bonds definitely didn't not never always do steroids. This week on 30-2010.
30-2010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days. And there's so much to say.
The regular 30-2010 theme, the goofy old-timey one that Dotfulness slash Hot Dead made for us just for April Fools.
Yeah, we haven't done a proper April Fools podcast of any kind on the Laser Time Network. And
we did a VG Empire.
We did, yes. Like, oh yeah, that's right.
The Avenues of Fury.
Yeah. Well, that was a good
We should share that right now, just for the heck of it.
Yeah. Just listen to that. No.
Yeah. Well, but, I found it liberating to finally use my normal voice.
And to use all my favorite slang, you dingbats.
Dingbats and the big old moose.
The bull moose.
Bully on all of us.
He was the bull moose.
Yeah.
But if somehow this is your first episode tuning in, this is 30-2010, a weekly look back at what happened this very week, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That means 1986, 96, and 2006. This is for April 1st through the 7th. We were referring earlier to our April Fool's joke, so if this is somehow your first look, literally just one episode sooner for the joke. Yeah. But I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I am Christopher Shenane Antista.
I'm Henry Damn Gina Gilbert.
Oh, that was going to be mine.
I'm sorry. I'm Henry Bonds is a good guy, Gilbert.
God, can we just start over?
I'm Diana Cabot Cove Goodman. There we go.
We usually begin looking at movies or music or TV, but in this case, there was actually a piece of news that was worth discussing.
Taking your business on the road can be a cumbersome task. And productivity can easily fall off. Presenting the IBM PC Convertible.
The IBM PC Convertible laptop.
First laptop. In this commercial, look it up. It is a giant Charlie Chaplin parody shot at like...
a million frames.
Like shot like an old Charlie Chaplin film, but in color, and riding Charlie Chaplin riding around in a convertible to promote the PC Convertible. What is it, the first laptop?
First laptop. Well, wow. At least IBM's first laptop. It weighs less than 13 pounds, everybody.
Oh, wow. Man.
That's less than the heaviest bowling ball I used.
I wonder how hot your junk gets when it sits on it, too.
It looks like... the idea of it sitting in your lap seems like a joke.
The weight of it would just cut off the circulation, just, you know, so you wouldn't feel the burning.
And the way they show it, it connects to a monitor, and then you would, like, disconnect it and then flip this thing up, and now there's a monitor.
Oh, so it had a docking
thing.
Oh, yeah.
It was $2,000 in 1986.
Whoa, that's like
which is like $8
million. Dollars.
It's like five grand, I think.
Wow, that's...
That's Apple prices.
Well, you know, even in 1996 or even 2006, to me, having the idea of having a laptop was a luxury. But now I can't. Yeah. They've gotten cheap enough, and also they're for me and my job and the things I do. It's pretty much needed. I can't count on working on my desktop all the time.
Yeah, I haven't had a desktop since 2005. Because when I moved to California, it's like, well, I'm not going to ship this thing across the country, so I guess I need to get a laptop now, and then ever since. Mm-hmm. Which makes even on this thing, editing video and exporting, sounds like a Harrier is landing in my kitchen.
Yeah, still not strong, but look at all the crazy colors.
Look at the colors on this thing, children. You can't appreciate it as much as I do.
Yeah, listen.
apparently, this is the convertible was also the first of IBM's things to use the 3.5 floppy disk.
Wow.
So...
That is futuristic.
If you don't know what that is, kids, it's too late to care.
It's the save icon.
Yes, it's your
save
icon.
Yeah.
And it can store probably up to like 3 meg. No,
1.44 megs.
Wow.
Like a couple Word docs, maybe.
Half of a song.
I could put like 17 MIDIs on a floppy, and I had back in the mid-90s a collection of video game MIDI floppy disks.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
This was the Mega Man 2 floppy disk.
Wow. But the 3.5 was definitely a step up from, was it 5.5?
Yeah, the giant floppy.
The one that's literally floppy when you shake it around, and so it's really easy to damage. You put it in your bag, it's going to fold, and now it's broken forever.
Do you remember how confusing? Because they still called the 3.5-inch disc floppy disk for a long time. Like, put it on the hard disk. You cannot call that the hard disk.
No, it's a floppy disk. Because inside that plastic case is the same shitty thing.
Yeah. Remember zip disks when they tried to be like in between, and then you could write to CDs, and now information is everywhere, and like companies just say, like, here, just there's 3 gigs of storage. Just could you give us an email address?
Not only is information everywhere, like, I'm like, how many computers do you think you're in at this point? I think I'm on like my 12th. I stopped backing up my data a long time ago.
Yeah, I've been pretty good about everything. I've backed up like everything since 1996.
I mean, my docs and stuff, but like music, video, like that. If I want it that bad, I'll find it again.
Yeah. I still turn up floppies all the time.
Movies this week suck. There wasn't a whole lot. Like the last episode, we talked at great length about Police Academy 3.
Damn it.
It's still number one on its way to a $43 million haul.
Honk!
Captain What's His Name. And we talked earlier in the year about a movie called Miracles with Christopher Lloyd, like a married couple that goes on an adventure.
It's trying to get a divorce or something.
Yeah, and like, will their divorce even last with this adventure they're going on where they fall in love? It's listed as coming out this week also, so this is one of those cross-reference things.
I think it was like a foreign date.
Could be. But also, who cares?
We talked about it more than anybody in the last 20 years.
And then Tom Hanks's Money Pit is still in theaters, but is not number one. So I just thought, because there's so little to talk about from movies this week, apparently. But if somehow we did miss something in the country you grew up in, let us know. LaserTimePodcast.com.
Yeah, you can link us to a Yugoslavian Superman. That would be amazing.
Yeah. TV, though, this week, a fair amount of stuff to talk about this week. April 1st through the 7th, Henry.
To start with a shorter subject, April 6th was the premiere of the 4-episode-running Fathers and Sons TV series, which tried to turn former L.A. Rams football player Merlin Olsen into basically his own Webster-type show. Webster had a former football player who adopted children, so why not get another football player?
God.
And Merlin Olsen is known for his sweet voice and for being in Mitchell. He was the tough guy in Mitchell, the MST3K episode.
He was a flower pitchman for FTD.
Yeah,
so was this based on the 1862 novel by Ivan Turgenev?
I do not believe so.
Fuck.
But let's listen to this opening, though.
I am a modern-day boy. I'm the child of our time.
Starring Merlin Olsen.
Kid, you're an alien. No, nobody talks like this.
Human children singing about... No,
I like oxygen.
Hey. You know this is going places.
Yeah.
There's the black kid, Hakeem.
Let's jump a minute into this. Remember when shows had the balls to have a minute and a half opening?
Wow.
And now, like, Broad City is literally 4 and 3 and 2 and
4
1.
4 and 3 and 2
and it's over. It's barely the 4 seconds it took to say that.
Well, and remember even 10 years ago in The Office, like, nah. Office.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, they tried to... stay on the air by having a special episode with multiple of his old NFL pals on it. It still wasn't enough to save it from being canceled in 4 episodes. Let's get into the real meat here. We could have talked about it so many times before, but I think this week is worth bringing it up. On this week's episode of Murder, She Wrote, April 6th, the episode is called Menace Anyone, where Linda Hamilton is a tennis star who has attempted to be murdered. And one of the...
is it by a robot from the future?
One of the expected... No, unfortunately not. This was 2 years after the premiere of Terminator. But one of the suspects... her boyfriend, tennis star Bryan Cranston.
Ooh. Wow, really?
And there's a tiny clip off Vine was the only thing I could find.
Yes, this is our first Vine clip that we've played.
Well, it's a Vine joke.
So. Yeah, she says things like that. But I love her anyway.
Stupid bitch.
So
that's Bryan Cranston talking to...
Angela Lansbury,
a.k.a. She says things like that. But I love her anyway.
And then her bewildered look.
Yeah, he's talking to Angela Lansbury. But, yeah, Murder, She Wrote is famous for a lot of reasons. Ran for 12 whole years. Oof. And one thing I regret not doing now, in February, Bryan Cranston made his third appearance as a completely different character on Murder, She Wrote in a 1996 episode.
Yeah, so 10 years after this one.
Yeah, so he was in an 86 episode, 90 episode, and 1996 episode.
Was it really that hard to be an actor if that's happening?
Well, like, there was this rotisserie of character of like guest stars back then. Because if you watch, if you only watch let's say Murder, She Wrote, Knight Rider, Star Trek, and like X-Files, you're like, oh, it's that guy. And they show up over and over again.
There's so many, you know, sort of working character actors. Yeah. It's the same thing you see on Law and Order. It's like every single Actors Equity actor in all of New York has cycled through a Law and Order at some point.
Yeah. Except it was cheaper on that show because Murder, She Wrote, Jessica Fletcher was the only real, not the only real recurring character, but she was...
Well, Tom Bosley,
yes. But she was in the center of the show, and then, like, they just needed constant churn of guest actors who had moved to L.A. and needed some work. And so I wrote down a list of some of the crazy guests they had on the show from airing in... starting 1984 till 1997, though she also starred in four TV movies from 97 to 2003. That's how long the show went.
Yeah.
But the guest stars included Courtney Cox, Joaquin Phoenix, George Clooney, Megan Mullally, Vincent D'Onofrio, and Leslie Nielsen in a clip I found of Leslie Nielsen giving a big old smooch to Angela Lansbury.
So the premise, if somehow you missed this show entirely, and this is one as a kid, I thought, like, I don't want to watch this old lady solve mysteries. But then as an adult, I'm like, this show's really fun.
Yeah.
And is done very well. And I don't know. It's Angela Lansbury as this regular old lady who always manages to be at the scene of some crime or in the periphery of a crime and then helps the police solve it every single week.
Right. She's a mystery writer, too. So it's like, you know, Agatha Christie detective.
Yes. Well, it's funny that she had played Miss Marple once.
Yes.
A couple years before this. They had planned on making it a whole Miss Marple series, but the movie was not that successful, the one she was in. And then at the same time, a couple of TV writers thinking of this new mystery show. They go to a couple of ladies, including Doris Day, turned him down. And Gene Stapleton also turned him down.
Oh, Gene Stapleton would have been fun.
She would have been fun, too. But Angela Lansbury, who, as of this recording, 90 years young, still with us.
I love Angela Lansbury.
Like, she has been a star for about 8 decades, I would say.
I think she started in, I want to say, Portrait of Dorian Gray. She's like 18.
Does she have a portrait that's like keeping her alive?
Well, no, maybe she does. Yeah,
maybe.
National Velvet, she's Elizabeth Taylor's older sister.
Now Elizabeth Taylor dead for several years now.
Yep.
I think because of this, you type her into IMDb. She owns Angela as a search term.
Yeah.
Yes. Lansbury. Sorry, Bassett.
Yeah. Damn. Both on the same joke. Yeah, but she was also famous in MAME, the Broadway production.
Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Her in Sweeney Todd. She is the most famous actress to play, the one that Helena Bonham Carter played in the film version of Sweeney Todd.
Somebody has pointed out that Bedknobs and Broomsticks sounds like a great porn store.
That began her relationship with Disney, which stayed for a while. I mean, she's probably to a generation listening to this, she's most famous as Mrs. Potts. Miss Potts, not Mrs. And she also hosted a segment in Fantasia 2000, as I recall.
My favorite thing about the show, though, Murder, She Wrote, is every episode, you can set your watch to this, is at some point either the cop or a suspect,
an interviewee.
Like, listen, lady.
I think your wife, Carolyn, like, just try and drink every time someone says, like, listen, lady.
But that's part of the fun of the show. It's like, they're underestimating her. She's going to get them.
Yeah.
Well, and the other fun was the guest stars were part of the fun, too, because you'd say, this person's too famous to be here for one scene. And they're probably either the killer or they'll die.
One of the greatest episodes of this show, I think, is in season 10, where she solves a virtual reality murder.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
And I think it's Kevin Sorbo, isn't it? And it's just like Angela Lansbury wearing VR goggles. Like, what an amazing video game.
It is beautiful.
It is wonderful. Another great Angela Lansbury film is the original Manchurian Candidate, where she is the somewhat incestuous evil mother of the Manchurian Candidate.
So a bit of a spoiler, but
she is so great, though, because you're so used to, like, when I finally saw that, I'm so used to, know, Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Murder, She Wrote. And she's so sweet and cute. And she's like everyone's grandma. And all of a sudden she's like, you have to kill him and you have to shoot him in the head. Shoot him right between the eyes.
Honey, you must perform this assassination plot. I programmed it in your brain.
Manchurian Candidate is surprising because it's about a Republican nominee that the group is afraid of. And they're like, we can't let this guy be our nominee. He's too scary. Such a fiction.
I can't understand.
But you mentioned Disney many times in that bit about murder, about Angela Lansbury. And you mentioned Disney's I-Man?
Yeah, so this week there was a special I-Man about the Indestructible Man, a Disney TV movie that they showed on Wonderful World of Disney.
Was it bad?
Well, let's give it a listen.
Disney's Sunday movie. Dad! Jeffrey Wilder is now an indestructible man.
An invincible man against impossible odds. I-Man Sunday.
Wow.
Do you think, did the villain end up breaking the I-Man? Diana is not happy with me over that one.
But it's Scott Bakula playing.
I'm waiting for the I-Man Pro.
And I wish someday I would love to rediscover all this stuff because I didn't have cable and we had three channels in Florida. And this is, I basically taped these TV movies off of Disney and watched them over and over again, and they are gone. Ooh. They do not exist.
Ooh. They're not a golden age for them, even in the slightest.
It was disposable at the time.
Yeah. So what happened? He gets blown up at a football game and then they rebuild him?
It's pretty much unbreakable, it sounds like, actually. But a computer gave him his unbreakable powers.
Let me run this back here.
Dad! Jeffrey Wilder is now an indestructible man.
An invincible man against impossible odds.
He's grabbing a chain link fence and electrocuting it. What does it have to do with him being invincible?
He's proving
and
he's invincible.
And why is I-Man in the DuckTales font? I'm very confused.
They got to get a Jones font at that point.
Well, yeah.
They got to get a lot of use out of that font. Mm-hmm. Oh, one other thing I want to say about Murder, She Wrote, though, too, is that it had a short-lived spinoff for Jerry Orbach. Where in 1987,
also a Beauty and the Beast cast member, weird.
They're both Broadway stars who then starred in crime dramas for 8 million years on television, and it was it was one season, and then like 2 years later, he's on Law and Order until his death. And which I love Jerry Orbach and Angela Lansbury both have a place in my heart as the wonderful Broadway New Yorkers who solved all those mysteries. Yeah.
Yep. Actually, I think we missed something I just want to throw out a couple weeks ago. We missed the premiere of 120 Minutes.
Oh.
Like a week or two ago.
Oh, on MTV.
On MTV.
Oh, wow.
With host Matt Binfield.
With Matt Binfield.
Somebody
there was a recent, or 96.
86.
There was a recent news story. Some wonderful tech-savvy music nerd uploaded almost everything from 120 minutes, and it is transfixing to watch.
It looks like I just Googled that, and if you go to 120minutes.tylerc.com, definitive library of videos.
I'm sure he's getting copyright flags, but he's removing some of the more popular stuff. But it is fascinating to watch 120 minutes in full.
Yeah, it was. I remember it was, by the time I was watching in the mid 90s, it was like at night, right?
Yeah.
It was always midnight to two or something like that. But it was like 2 hours hosted by Matt Pinfield, and they would just play videos the whole time.
Yeah,
at a time.
But it was different videos. They were alternative indie. Yeah,
things wouldn't get played during the day.
Yeah.
I'm Matt Pinfield. I would break a camera, but I know a shitload about music. And
this is where I saw, like, the first time I think I saw KMFDM was because Matt Pinfield, who would later host a show, Farmhouse or something. He went, like, when MTV was just like, you're not doing 120 minutes anymore, he started some other show called like Farmview.
I just remember that Matt Pinfield's girlfriend when I was a kid lived in Jacksonville, so I saw him like twice. I always associate 120 minutes with the album that they put out of it, or one of the many albums that was the Man with a Beard of Bees on the cover.
Farm Club, that's what it was.
Those kinds of images so define the night, the mid 90s alternative scene.
Yeah.
Stock footage of circus acts. Like it is amazing how emblematic that is of that entire era.
I mean, Perry Farrell worked real hard to associate freak shows with alternative music in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, but no, that's totally where I heard, you know, so much stuff that was basically college radio that ended up breaking, like, you know, REM, but Circo, like, Document and Green.
Who was the original host? It wasn't Matt Pinfield. He was a 90s host.
J.J. Jackson, Martha Quinn, Alan Hunter, Downtown Julie Brown,
Rip.
Adam Curry. Matt Pinfield didn't come in until 95. So, yeah. But that's right when I was watching it, so it all checks out.
I think it's the first place I heard Smashing Pumpkins, too.
Yeah, they have this list of, like, Oasis, 10,000 Maniacs, Butthole Surfers, Radiohead, KMFDM, Offspring. A lot of them probably got their start.
Rage, Husker Du.
Apparently Smells Like Teen Spirit. World premiered on 120 Minutes.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds about right.
But, yeah. Started, what, March in 1986?
Yeah. I know, way earlier than I thought.
Apologies for missing that, folks.
Thanks for nothing.
Sorry.
In this week, April 1st to 7th, though, in 1986, we haven't done this since, I think, the first episode, which was just mention, like, what the ratings were for that week on TV. Unsurprisingly, The Cosby Show is the number one show.
That man can't be stopped.
After that is Family Ties, the Academy Awards, Murder, comma, She Wrote.
Yeah.
Who's the Boss? He just showed up in Broad City, actually. Tony Danza. Cheers, Golden Girls, and Perfect Strangers, which we talked about the debut of Perfect Strangers the prior episode.
Wow, it's shot to the top that fast. 21.3 rating. It's matching gold. It's getting close to Golden Girls and Cheers within a week. Like, was that just the power of Bronson Pinchot? Is he that?
I just, like, right before we were recording, I was listening to our segment on that. And you're absolutely right how easy it was for a kid to connect with stuff. And we were talking about the Muppets. And just, again, in that three-channel era. For people like me, like we weren't exactly poor, but there was no cable.
There
was
no cable
and no VCR. So something the family could get in on, like my mom would like and I would like, that's going to be watched.
Yep.
And I'm not behind Family Ties. No. Don't get it.
But Bronson Pinchot acts like more of a child than any character on Family Ties.
Yeah, a wacky dude who keeps starting to fuck goats. Like, that's the guy.
The guy that's playing the straight man, I can at least be like, oh, that guy's a dork, and he's lame, and make fun of him, Balky. Like, you could totally get into it.
So, except for Perfect Strangers, the Oscars, and Murder, She Wrote, those were all NBC, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They were crushing it.
Yeah, well. Cheers,
it was a golden age for them.
Taking us out of 1986 this week, well, music-wise, it's important to note it's listed that the New Kids on the Block debut album.
They had a bunch of hits.
So that's Jordan Nye, Joy McIntyre, Donnie and Mark Wahlberg.
Was Mac in there?
No, it was
Mark wasn't in there.
Mark had his own funky bunch.
Oh, yeah, Mark was the other guy. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So this early thing is not what you remember.
Mm-hmm.
It would take them a few more years to get to the era that everyone associates
with.
Yeah. So
86 is when they came out?
Well, this initial album
bit
more. I think they called it, it was just like too poppy bubblegum at a time when that wasn't really the sound anymore.
Okay. Too poppy? Well, for the New Kids?
Well, but the New Kids had to get tough later,
so
man.
When they came back in 89, it was all about hanging tough and all that stuff. So...
The right stuff.
The right stuff, which, my sister's 7 years older than me, so believe me, even though I didn't listen to it, I heard all of it for years.
They needed a little more time to find black artists to rip off correctly.
Nice.
If we make this show for 3 years, we'll definitely be talking about NKOTB.
Mm-hmm. Which one's the gay one? Which one came out? Is it Nick Entire or Jordan Knight?
Joey. No, it was Danny. No, it was the other guy. No. Which one came out as straight? That's the answer should be.
Oh, I see.
British band The Blow Monkeys had an album called Animal Magic. Rock Me Amadeus is still number one. We played a little bit of that last week from Falco. But we're going to go out this week with Sly Fox, Let's Go All the Way, which was apparently in GTA 5, but it's also just a great song.
Covered by ICP?
Yes, it sure was. But we'll go out with the Sly Fox version of the song. And we'll be back with what happened this week in 1996.
Hello, all you cultured people. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. You know what Audible is, right? Audible is the internet's leading source of audiobooks, spoken word entertainment, comedy. Oh, and look at that, one of my favorites, old-timey radio dramas. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from, and they automatically sync for free to your iPhone, Android, Kindle, whatever the hell you listen to your audio entertainment on. If you like listening to podcasts like ours, odds are you'll probably like listening to stuff on Audible. And if you wanted to check out Audible, we got an exciting offer for you, Laser Time listeners. You can
get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial just by going to audibletrial.com/lasertime. You can get heavy-hitter audiobooks like Harry Potter, Dune, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. But since we're talking about reality shows, I wanted to make a realistic recommendation. One of my favorite books that I read in the last year was Jim Henson, The Biography. You know me, I love The Muppets, but it was a little interesting to hear a little bit of the real Jim Henson, the kind that doesn't get spoken about all the time. Like the guy who collected big green and fancy cars, or begged royalty for money, or quietly left his wife without divorcing her to meet other women. Yes, that Jim Henson, that happened.
Me?
Yes, you, Jim Henson.
Oh.
But don't take my word for it. Head on over there and give it a shot. Browse Audible's wares, and then get your free audiobook and free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/lasertime.
It's the truth! Your principal can't smile, can't swim, can't rap, and
can't stand bubble tape.
Your school bus driver can't drive, wears curlers, makes funny noises, won't try bubble tape.
No way, Jose!
Bubble tape, it's 6 feet of bubble gum for you, not them.
Pass it, man.
That is Namaste.
What?
From Beastie Boys, The End Sound from Way Out, an instrumental album.
This is the one album of theirs I didn't have.
I had actually never heard of this before.
That's a pretty sweet jam, man.
But yeah, the whole album, it's a compilation album that has some stuff from the prior album, and which I think is the one with Sabotage on it, because this is 1996 now, remember, people.
Yeah, I would guess well, there's Paul's Boutique and then the Kit.
License Dill.
That's way earlier.
No, License Dill was like 86 or 84 or something.
Ill Communication. That's
sorry.
As long as they were ill.
It was straight illin. Speaking of illin, in 96, we talked about last week, Muppets Tonight. We were so devoted to the idea of you seeing Kermit the Frog cover Talking Heads Once in a Lifetime. It is on our Facebook page.
Please look at this.
Facebook.com/... You need to see it if you're mildly curious.
You can listen to that last episode, and you can hear me be distracted for the rest of the show by this.
It's transfixing. I've watched it like 6 times. It's great.
But Because You Loved Me is still number one. Yeah. That's the Celine Dion jam that will rule the year. And Roseanne Cash...
Facebook.com/lasertimepodcast. Excuse me.
Of course. Roseanne Cash had an album, 10 Song Demo, which is Johnny Cash's
daughter.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard this before.
No? Johnny?
You won't be surprised to hear that.
Yeah, Roseanne Cash is cool.
There was almost a Carter Family song on the April Fool's episode, but I chose the more aged song for 1906 to play.
Oh, for our April Fool's thing.
I look forward to the day we can have our real Beastie Boys discussion, but now it's not
I look
the time
forward
for
to
it.
The really private place where we discussed the songs we didn't play in the April Fool's episode of what were popular then. Like, that we don't even want to say the title of them because of the racism inherent in the
title. Then it will be a recording of me saying those words. And it was the most popular song of April.
But it was, wasn't it?
Yes, it sure was.
Do some internet sleuthing of your own, people.
For
I'm
1886
sure
and 96 popular songs.
Popular songs.
But anyway.
So news this week, actually two not funny things, very sobering things. So this week...
The FBI agents hunting for the deadly Unabomber have detained a Montana man described as a hermit. A neighbor identified him as Theodore Kaczynski. Law enforcement officials say that he is not under arrest, but he is being detained as a suspect. He's being held in custody in Lincoln, Montana.
He's not been detained, so nobody tell him.
Berkeley,
he doesn't have CNN, so he cannot see this broadcast.
Berkeley, California professor Teddy Kaczynski?
Yes. So in this week, agents find and scour the suspected Unabomber cabin.
Unabomber is a Mario villain.
Really hard to say, Unabomber cabin. And find a typewriter that may have been the one to use to write his manifestos. And he's arrested on April 3rd after years of bombings that killed 3 people. 8 life sentences eventually without parole.
Yep. And it was his brother that basically tipped off the FBI.
Oh,
because
was it?
He had this
trusted
whole...
one person, man.
Well, no, because since he had this whole thing, it's like, maybe I'll stop if you print my manifesto. And, you know, a lot of papers didn't. I think San Jose Mercury News was the first that did, and a couple other ones did. People are like, don't let him spread whatever his crazy-ass ideology is. But his mom and his brother read it. And his brother realized, oh my God, this sounds like Ted.
Wow.
Wow.
And it's also one of those, and yet another in a long line of horrible people Will Ferrell made me love.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, this is when terrorism was funny. Like, this was a domestic terrorist who everybody, like, should have been afraid of, who had killed 3 people and harmed a lot of others.
Yeah, but like,
many comedians made fun of him. I mean,
because the news wasn't putting in mind, like, this could happen to you tomorrow. Like, nobody felt that way about the Unabomber.
Well, and then that sketch became the sketch of the Unabomber in his hoodie and sunglasses with his pedophile mustache. Like, that
Weird Al looking motherfucker.
I know, poor Weird Al, people have told him. But yeah, it just became a character unto itself. Like Upright Citizens Brigade, SNL, a million places fun of the Unabomber character. And then to find out, like, when they finally found Kaczynski, it got rid of that character, because you're like, oh no, it's this crazy bearded weirdo. Like,
that's the Will Ferrell character I love. The orange jumpsuit, crazy hair, beady eyes. It's great.
Now, Chuck Klosterman, who I brought up on a recent Laser Time as well, he had this really interesting like deconstruction of Ted Kaczynski and his beliefs. Mm-hmm. And he had this really interesting point of that, like, maybe Ted Kaczynski was right about a couple things about how media controls our lives and influences us in all these ways. And his example was from Kaczynski's manifesto. He said, until moving pictures, if a kid wanted to imagine a train about to hit them, who knows what they thought of, but once they saw it in a movie, that dictated how they would construct it in their mind from then on. Like, imaginary events, you think of them how you more often think of how they were seen in a film, or you construct it like a film instead of however you dreamed it before.
And what was the point of this, though?
That it robbed
Marvel
you.
Marvel movies are terrible.
So I need to mail exploding letters to people?
It robbed you of imagination. It robbed you of your imagination. That's what I mean.
Or it expanded your imagination by showing you different things. Yeah, maybe you never saw a train in your life, and you imagined it was like a buffalo on wheels.
Sure.
Well, I actually do want that. But there's something about the targets that he would send these at were people who were like pushing technology along or were involved in science fields in some capacity.
Like,
and he's
it was
like,
called UNA because it was universities and airports.
Oh yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, but
it was mostly like university professors.
But he was a well-learned man who, like I said, was a Berkeley, California.
One of my favorite country songs.
Well-learned man. And, yeah, he's just been in jail since then. Now he's something kids don't even remember, man.
Movies this week. Primal Fear?
Oh, yeah.
I have a clip if you want it, because this is Edward Norton's introduction to the world. Like, he broke through as a stage actor to a huge, huge part in a Richard Gere movie.
Yeah.
He plays a stuttering murder suspect named Aaron, who seems very gentle and weird, and then eventually Richard Gere, through pressuring him, finds out he has multiple personality disorder with a character called Roy, who, I forget how it works, he can't enter a mental insanity plea because the trial's already started, so he has to get Roy to come out during the trial. Mm-hmm. And he does, and then the judge is like, fuck this, it's throwing this case out, this dude is insane, whether he did it or not is irrelevant, put him in a hospital. And this is, I have a clip from the end of the film where
spoilers.
This is a huge spoiler.
Had to kill Linda, Mr. Vale. That cunt just got what she deserved.
Oh. Oof.
But cutting up that son of a bitch Rushman, that was just a fucking work of art.
You're good. You are really good.
Yeah, I did get caught, though, didn't I?
So there never was a Roy.
Jesus Christ, Marty, if that's what you think, I am disappointed in you. I don't mind telling you. There never was an Aaron, counselor.
Boom! It's a cold-ass ending. I know you'll never watch it, so I had no problem spoiling it. And one of the cool things I think about the film has an awesome... Because that's Richard Gere being told, I just played the shit out of you, and you got me off. Mm. Thanks, bro. And he just walks out and like stares at the camera, and the movie ends. and that's the poster for the film. The poster for the film is the last moment.
That's
the last moment of the film. I watched this a lot, and like, really, like, Edward... Did he win it?
He was nominated for it.
Like, this is his first movie.
Yeah, this is his first movie.
And he's like the main, one of the main characters.
I'd heard that he got the role by basically pretending to be the character, showing up and like, oh no, I'm just some Southern guy, and I just thought maybe I could be in your movie.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can see him like switching back and forth here and there.
What if him and Dwight Yoakam?
Ooh.
Got in a accent off.
It's also like one of those irritating 90s Hollywood movie titles that, like, you could have called any movie this.
Yeah.
And like, as a result, I'll bet if you did see it, you don't even remember what it's called because it doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
No, I think this... Edward Norton would be famous as, like, a method actory and sometimes difficult dude on sets afterward. Like, it's kind of why he's not the Hulk anymore. He half-directed American History X himself because he hated the director on that. Yeah. And when I saw him in Birdman, I was like, is this just you?
Yeah, that was, he was so good in that.
Yeah.
I did see Death of Smoochie somehow.
Wow. The one Edward Norton film. Well, you've seen Hulk as well.
I've seen Hulk.
Danny DeVito's Death to Smoochie.
R.I.P. Robin.
I hate that movie. One of my favorite Robin moments ever. He's like, I'm going on safari, motherfucker. Safari. It's so funny, and there's nothing else funny in that film at all.
I saw Birdman. So that's about superheroes. Also this week, a very important film.
Darnell had a way with women.
I love him.
And his mama had a way with words.
You listen to me. A night full of passion can give you a lifetime of pain.
But he just wouldn't listen.
He said you must.
Until it was too late.
I'm caught up in
That's because it's a comedic take on the Fatal Attraction premise.
Hang on, we'll finish the title of the movie.
Love and Hate.
There you go.
It's between a thin love and hate. Between love and hate.
It is inspired by a film. There's a cover of it in the movie.
Love that song.
So this film is written, directed, and starring Martin Lawrence.
I actually didn't know that.
And this premiered right as his show was still a huge hit on Fox. But here's a scene to let you know. Martin Lawrence, or Darnell, in Thin Line, Love and Hate, thinks of women.
Yo, T, you ain't gonna believe this shit, man. I come down to motherfucking precinct, right, to get a restraining order like my mom's asked me to do against Brandy, right? Because I don't want to hurt the bitch. That's just straight. I don't want to hurt the bitch.
Yeah.
Right? But I go up in there.
As he stands out in front of the police station.
Yeah. The film is
about...
What a
true gentleman. He does not want to hurt the bitch.
Well, so the film is...
I don't want... I will.
Doesn't want to.
If I have to.
The film is about his character learning a lesson that he is a philanderer who wants to get with his childhood sweetheart, played by Regina King, who is awesome.
I love her.
She's, I guess, most famous to our listen, maybe from Boondocks. She's a voice of both the kids. Yeah. Both the kids on Boondocks. But then instead, Martin Lawrence's character ends up, has a night of passion with Brandy, a crazy lady, because B words be crazy. And then she kind of tortures him for most of the film, and eventually, though, she ends up in jail. He realizes he shouldn't be a misogynist all the time.
Manipulating
and
the emotions of people just to get laid. Yeah. Nor should you. That lesson stands to this day.
But, so yeah, it was...
But I can only keep three lessons in my mind at a time.
All right, don't do drugs.
I'm like a Pokemon.
Go play sports.
I have to learn a lesson. I have to forget a lesson to learn.
It made $35 million. It was a success. It was a $10 million film.
When we were planning it, that Martin Lawrence wrote and directed the number one movie in the country at the same time he's starring in one of the number one shows.
Number one shows, yeah.
Like, that's like Jerry Lewis level of, like, that's grabbing huge. Hold of your career being successful.
Yeah, this segues nicely into the TV segment of the show because, at the same time, Martin is a hugely popular show.
Yes, so let's hear that theme song.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah! I love this.
This is good. Starring. Co-starring. Written by. Directed by.
Sinead.
How y'all doing?
And Sinead.
Look at that. I love this theme.
Tisha Campbell.
So if you're wondering what MTV still plays at night, it's this. They replay Martin. Because it's still, I think it got a bad rap for a little while because he was really over the top, played multiple characters.
Yeah. I mean, he's a clown.
But in hindsight, like, that's what's good about Fresh Prince. This, like, it's awesome. Yeah. No one else could have been this character.
Some people at the time, I think some critics rejected it for not being as smart as some shows at the time.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking broad.
It's very broad. Certainly, I'm not defending that. But yeah, it was no nuts that Martin Lawrence, like, he was this big, and I mean, he's on his way to a fall, which
But he had a stand-up comedy film that was out in theaters that got, for language, got an NC-17 rating, the X rating for language.
I mean, wow, what do you have to say to
him? He was one of the filthiest comedians of his time.
My friend somewhere has a tape of his SNL monologue, which you cannot see anywhere.
Yes, it's incredible, that SNL monologue. Yeah, and his sketch with Stuart Smalley where he calls Stuart gay for the entire
He calls Mike Myers a motherfucker in the episode. Hey, Bike, that sketch was cut forever, but it was one of our favorites because it just... like Mike Myers is a nerdy bike messenger and people just yell at him, and then it ends with Martin Lawrence, "Hey, bike messenger, you a motherfucker." The whole audience goes crazy.
I mean, he was an unpredictable guy, and not to spoil things for about four episodes from now, but on May 9th, Martin Lawrence, after a series of unpredictable behaviors, would run into the streets with a gun and start screaming at people and be put in the hospital for dehydration and exhaustion. The classic dehydration and exhaustion that affects...
You can hear the quotes. Yeah.
It affects so many celebrities, like Lindsay Lohan.
We've always talked about on other shows, Dave Chappelle talking about black men who rise... very fast in Hollywood. Why does this happen to all of them?
Yeah.
A situation that makes you fucking crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to the Harry Shearer on WTF. He talked about how Hollywood will make anyone crazy. Yeah. Anyone. Mm-hmm. And that's just a white person who's in the mainstream. To then be a minority, to then come up and be, you know, pushed into a corner by this stuff. Like, how could you? How can the excess and all of it not get to you?
It's hard to convey and replicate how popular Martin Lawrence became very quickly, to where like every kid in my school was quoting him, even though we shouldn't have been watching him. Our parents didn't know who he was.
Yeah, oh, I've been watching this all the time.
Yeah, everyone in my high school before 96, I was in college in 96, but I remember before that, like, everyone at high school watched it, and I was in the super white suburbs, and it was so weird to hear people singing "Martin." Yeah. It's like,
that's
what
that is fascinating, because you brought this up because you were watching the OJ thing.
Oh yeah, that was great.
And there is a great,
people versus OJ Simpson.
So I remember in middle school, like, people were like, "Did you see Seinfeld?" And I was always a Martin in Living Color guy. Like, I was watching that instead of Seinfeld, and I was actually, my heart was warm. Jerry Seinfeld was asked recently what his favorite episode of Seinfeld was. I hated it, didn't get it. My dad put it on, I'd leave the room until the marine biologist episode. And that Jerry Seinfeld said that was, we wrote that 2 seconds before, like an hour before we shot it. And it's my favorite episode because Jason Alexander memorized whatever. Yeah. But I was always a Martin guy.
Yeah. So in this, if you've been watching the show on FX, which is great, this O.J. Simpson
American Crime Story,
the People versus O.J. Simpson, just a retelling of this insane trial that we all lived through. But like, if you were born in 96 or 94 or anywhere, like, you may have vague memories. Like, the show is worth watching. It's goofy, but it does such a good job of trying to summarize the billion layers of that trial and why there will never be another trial
fans
like
this. Show will love that show.
Yes.
OJ changed America, like, that whole
in
thing.
In ways that, like, I took for granted as a teenager. I'm like, what? He did it in the glove and whatever. And it's like, oh man, I did not even realize the depth to a lot
of
stuff.
News coverage, trial coverage, DNA evidence, race, racist cops, like,
every conceivable
celebrity
box you could check of, like, it's like you just
lawyering up.
Yeah, it's like you just hit select all. Like, everything. But in this not the most recent episode, but as of this recording, it's a few episodes back. It's called Jury in Jail, and it's about the jury who had to spend 8 months, like,
sequestered.
Cordoned
off.
Yeah, more or less, like, even though
they're
still...
basically in jail.
Yes, more, like, even though they're not supposed to talk, of course they talk and hear other things, but nonetheless, you are living in a hotel with no TV in your room and just being treated like a weirdo the whole time. They finally get a moment where there's an episode, like, almost entirely about the jury and how they were treated and how they were selected, and then the cat and mouse game of how they all started getting kicked off. And there's a scene that encapsulates this exact moment in time in 1996 because the bailiffs show up and are like, look, we have some entertainment for you. What do you want to watch? And this is that scene and how it plays out.
Okay, so we've received a few complaints about talking during TV time. If you have something to say, please try to keep your voice down and your comments and laughter to a minimum.
Speaking of, Blockbuster sent over a fresh batch of VHSs today.
Hey, did they send Martin? Martin, that's my show. Man, don't nobody want to watch that clown?
He's a comedian. He's supposed to be funny.
Didn't you hear the woman say we can't laugh?
I'll laugh if I want to.
I wouldn't mind an episode of Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
What is a Seinfeld?
It's a TV show.
I never heard of it.
Seinfeld is a much better show.
Man, Seinfeld ain't about nothing.
We'll be watching Seinfeld.
What the hell? No.
I'm just making a decision here instead of listening to you people argue.
What do you mean?
Oh, no, don't start that crap with me, pal. I'm part American.
You need
Hey, you guys, come on. I'm sure we can find something we all want to watch.
Look, why don't we just take a vote?
Well, that's a great idea. Thank you, Armando. Yeah, yeah. Who votes Martin?
Hey. Half the room votes Martin.
What I'm talking about.
Now, if you want to watch Seinfeld.
Oh, that's not it.
Other half of
Martin it is.
Right, okay.
So that's just such a slice of life. Like,
yeah, it really is. That Blockbuster generously donated tapes of Martin, which did not exist.
They didn't do that.
But I think that's I love those screenwriters. They wrote Ed Wood, the people writing that show.
And People versus Larry Flynt.
Yeah.
So
such a good show.
And the only other thing that spurred this discussion of Martin on the list this was the final appearance on the show of one Tracy Morgan.
Whoa.
Playing the character of...
Check it out. Hustle Man is in the house.
Hustle Man?
He was Hustle Man.
I totally forgot about
that. Recurring character Hustle Man. It was his first television role, and it was one of those things. It kind of reminds me of how when you watch like Beverly Hills Cop and you see Damon Wayans in it, like this is a comedian helping another comedian.
Yeah, totally.
An up-and-coming person and putting them
when
on
the
show.
You see Chris Rock in like ancient Eddie Murphy movies before he was on SNL.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And it's the same deal there. And Tracy Morgan, dude, is fucking hilarious. He is so great, but this is one of his first TV show appearances where he was basically this clown who just showed up for like a 2-minute scene where he was the local hustler who would be like, God, this pizza is real fresh. Get it for $20, man. And then
he's opening his coat here. Let's see what happens.
Cheap. I got food stamps. I got incense. I got a Greyhound bus in the parking lot.
That's him in the barbershop, by the way.
He's in a barbershop, yes.
He's so fucking funny. But yeah, I didn't even know he was on the show.
But then you were saying years later when 30 Rock starts.
So when 30 Rock starts.
First episode.
In the first episode, Tracy Jordan is given a lot of crazy things to do, including Martin Lawrence's... running around in the streets.
They take away the gun and add a lightsaber, and he screams,
I'm a Jedi.
To make it funnier.
It's so right, yeah. And I think you can hear Martin Lawrence's own version of why he did that in the, I think, Run Tell Dat. I think that has his thing.
Run Tell Dat.
He says, like, I didn't have a gun. All right, I had a gun.
We got a couple weeks for it. Let's...
Oh, and also Tisha Campbell. She was great as Gina. She kind of did what, if you remember as everyone remembers on Three's Company when they wrote off Suzanne Summers. In the last season, there was some drama behind the scenes between Tisha Campbell and then Tisha Campbell Martin and Martin Lawrence.
Instance of an on-screen couple one suing the other for sexual harassment.
Yeah, so story was
guess who sued who.
The most recent story was that version of events was that behind the scenes they
you
did have
the clip from like Thin Line Between Love and Hate of him finally.
They had an early.
Here's the phone of him
calling 911.
They had like a sort of onset relationship, and they were playing, you know, husband and wife, so that can happen. But then she ended up marrying a man named Dwayne Martin, and Martin Lawrence not happy about that, and gave her a lot of grief over picking somebody who wasn't him. And she said he sexually harassed her a lot. She had to, like, hide in her makeup chair. And that's why there's never been There's never been like a reunion thing of this because she would never. I would wonder if she'd ever do it. Like, though you should be happy. Last year, Martin Lawrence teased that he had completed the first draft of the script for Thin Line Between Love and Hate 2.
Really?
Yep.
I want to see him. You know, I really want to see a third Bad Boys movie.
I think that's coming, isn't it?
I hope so.
Shit just got real.
Again.
I don't think I've seen either one of those somehow.
You got to see two. We need to see that like tomorrow.
A couple other quick TV bits I wanted to get out. The Kentucky Wildcats beat the Syracuse Orangemen 76-67 to win the 1996 NCAA championship. And it's the only famous player on it really was Donovan McNabb, who was a two-sport athlete. He was playing basketball, but he would go on to be an NFL Hall of Famer, winning the Super Bowl with the Eagles.
How the fuck do you play football in the NFL and do anything else?
Yeah, it's weird. You figure you'd be beat to shit by that. But also, there was a TV movie called...
No Salukis, let me just say that.
There was Brothers on the Front... Brothers of the Frontier.
Oh, I actually remember this.
The three Lawrence brothers in a Wild West picture.
Yes. Oh, I watched this with my boyfriend at the time, and we just laughed. And it was so much... There was like a scene where it's like... some guys are fighting and another guy like, hey, well, you guys okay? We got to break up this fight. And it's just this shoving. It seems like 10 minutes of shoving. A guy walks up, a Lawrence brother shoves him. Another guy's like, hey, I think your shoes are on. Shove.
I didn't mean to be talking about two Lawrences in this thing, but
well, it's too late.
And also, To Sir With Love 2 premiered on April 7th, a TV movie that did star Sidney Poitier.
Oh, my God.
And he came to Chicago to help clean up the bunch of rowdy kids there.
Why was it not called To Sir, T-W-O, Sir That's With
too,
Love?
That's too clever by half. And
yeah, Sir With Love 2 is like Fast and Furious almost, where I'm like, was the next one
Fast and Furious?
Got the star. That's shocking. And Diana, you'll be surprised to learn it was directed by Peter Bogdanovich.
Oh my God.
He was at that point in his career. I mean, it was a rough patch pretty much from like 1980 onward for him. Right?
Who is Peter Bogdanovich? Other than a Tekken character.
Fascinating. They have the same name. They do.
Director of Paper Moon. The Last Picture Show?
Texasville?
What was the one with Streisand? What was that one? Bringing Up Baby?
You're going to strike on that one, too. I'll just guess.
We saw one of his movies at the Burt Reynolds musical.
Oh.
What was that? That was him.
A Long Last Love.
Yes, I did see that. That's bad. I did see that.
Yeah.
What's Up, Doc is the one.
What's Up, Doc? Thank you. And one that's close to my heart, Kindred the Embraced premiered.
Oh, I can't
believe
that. He has his first movie in a decade, just came out on demand services.
Peter Bogdanovich, really? But
she's kind of funny that way. All old school titles.
In case you don't know what Kindred the Embraced is, it's based on the White Wolf tabletop RPG series Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh.
And
we were moving, Michael, we found a tape where Michael had a tape of it.
Oh, really? Man.
And I laughed.
And he's
laughed
married
at
to
him.
A woman?
Yes, so he's married to. Human woman.
The soundtrack to virginity.
So this was only aired 8 episodes, but let's hear a little clip from it.
They've already entered your world.
We have kindred in every walk of life, Frank.
Hang on. This music...
Wow.
This music is like... Anyway.
On April 2nd, all I ask is for a moment. Get ready to enter theirs.
Right as your friend now.
Rock and roll!
Kindred. Premieres Tuesday, April 2nd on Fox.
This was truly the heyday of Fox, where they're like, we're going to only show things the other networks would never
to embrace every form of counterculture we can.
If they had held on until after The Matrix came out, they might have
I mean, well,
it's that same aesthetic.
First off, With Fox, Firefly is an example of this too. Fox will give chances to things that would never get put on TV on any other major network, but the downside to that is they also get canceled very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Firefly got 13. This got 8.
Yeah, it took the other networks about 5 years to rip off Arrested Development.
Yeah,
because after it was canceled, because they never would have embraced that kind of format to begin with.
But Kindred the Embraced was based
about sexy vampires.
As in the games, as in the tabletop RPGs, vampires are real. And their ability is to hide in plain sight. And each vampire has their kindred that own a city. They control it. There's the prince of the city who controls it, and there's all the other ones who operate, the other vampires that operate under that fiefdom, and they have to follow the rules. And in the tabletop RPG, you would then create a vampire of your choice who would live in that world.
Does anybody else want to give him a wedgie, like, real bad?
Yes.
Come on.
Can you hold these books so I can knock them on the ground?
Is tabletop RPGs too far for you?
No, one of my friends played this stuff. I did find it impenetrable.
I was D&D, it's fine.
Okay, so that was the thing. I loved White Wolf games because they were way more simpler than D&D. White Wolf was the publisher of the games. They made Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf the Apocalypse, Mage the Awakening.
Can you say this like Troy McClure, please?
These are just random words and adjectives.
Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Zombie the Simmering.
Well, no, they were
and Frankenstein the Lumbata.
I mean, they were distilled 90s goth kid dumb crap into a thing. Like, what if a werewolf
mummy,
was
the
a
snowstorm?
There was a mummy when I forget its side thing.
Dial M for mummy.
No, but
I have to know.
Yeah, search mummy White Wolf. I forget what it was, but Mage. If you played them too,
Mummy the Resurrection.
Mummy the Resurrection.
Oh, that's too easy.
So if you played these games as well, and then 3 years later saw The Matrix, knew that it was one of many things that the Wachowskis took from and were inspired by, however you want to see it. But it was about leather clad people who exist in on a certain level that the normies of the world and the pedestrians, they're not woke
fucking
to
blue like pillars, man.
Well, this also like Blade would. I mean, Blade didn't go
Blade's
full this
very similar
because Blade actually himself is kind of the only one who really dressed like that in that movie. And then this also reminds me of Underworld a bit.
Underworld. When Underworld came out, I was like, they're fucking ripping off Mage, man. They were ripping off.
This is
Vampire.
Columbine the series.
Yeah. I'm sure they play. Look, I loved those games. I played them all the time. I hated rolling characters than any other RPG, I have my bag full of D10s ready to roll, man.
Axel from Twisted Metal is my favorite.
You know, Terry
character.
Boea doesn't have a D10. He has that's Hulk Hogan.
Stepped on my Twisted Metal joke, man.
Sorry.
All right, but fine. Enough about Kindred.
I never get to make fun of anybody for being a nerd. If you could see the room we're in right now.
There is an
alphabetized Disney shelf right behind me.
Did your hubby play these games?
He did, actually. And my boyfriend at the time did. I went to one party.
Ooh,
they
she
were
doesn't have
that.
A type. She does have a type.
Oh, yeah. Fucking losers. I'm sorry, honey. I went to one party. I was like, well, this sounds fun. It's like an improv thing. And then I got there. I was like, well, this is the worst idea I've ever had in my life. I just sat there like eating goldfish crackers while people walked around doing vampire stuff. It seemed to devolve into chaos because no one wanted to lose.
Nope.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, no. When you threw that lightning bolt, I jumped in front of it.
Invincible
and it's like
times affinity.
Right. No, so everyone just gets into nerd fights because no one wants to lose. They played Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo over and over and over. And it's like,
we are more Bauhaus as our soundtrack.
But don't, they have
and
to abide
I dreamed
by
the... of becoming a lesbian.
So let me.
You have to abide by the dice rolls, right? So, like,
yes, but it's up to your storyteller or game master to. There's no dungeon center. Not a dungeon master. Right. It's a game master or storyteller.
We must move on.
I want to cut this off, but I'm so happy right now.
I mean, there was
never felt so cool.
It was there. There really was a real power play dynamic.
You know, I threw a football this year, so...
There was real power play dynamic to it. It was a bunch of nerd rules. It was improv, though. That's what I loved about it. But it was also fun to see the sociological situation that would happen when one guy would bring their girlfriend to it once and say, just make a character for my girlfriend. And then another guy would try... Like, there'd always be one other dude in the group who's like...
He tries to bang
hitting,
her character.
Hitting on her character.
Yep.
And then say, like, oh, no, then...
ethics in tabletop gaming.
And then the guy would say... Oh no, I use my drug raping powers to trick her into having sex with me. And then there's a fight, and then one person leaves and never comes back. And then everybody's like, oh, the girl's here. Guess we're playing with a girl. And then the girl actually did know how to play. She had to go up a mountain of expectations, and they just didn't want
to avoid the dreaded vaginal annex card.
I know.
Because it's like, I don't want this girl here because she will somehow compromise this. And it's like, that's your fault.
They're going to compromise the entire integrity of our fake vampire game.
Yes,
you're gonna... Where we walk around wearing bad capes and...
I didn't dress up for
and maybe act really serious about something.
Not even once, Hank?
My Nosferatu Lancaster was very, very powerful.
That's my favorite pickup truck, by the way.
And my friend's Gangrel named Red Fang was afraid in the end of my character.
Look, I can't... I'm not judging at all because I played a shit ton of D&D. It was super fun. But when you break it down into the rules and descriptions, it always sounds stupid.
Yeah.
But it was a ton of fun.
I love you, Henry. Jesus.
Yeah.
Taking us out.
Oh, wait. We didn't even talk about the Roseanne Saturday Night Special.
Oh, my God.
There's
my God.
Just one short... We looked at it because I think Mad TV had kicked off and Fox was trying to battle... battle the other networks on the weekends, and Roseanne got to produce her own Saturday Night Live ripoff.
Oh, wow.
There is not a single piece of visual evidence this ever existed.
Wow.
If not for Kathy Griffin talking about it in her HBO half-hour stand-up special.
I was just on a show called Saturday Night Special, and I was a regular on that, and it was produced by Roseanne. Let me just say this about her. I love her. Okay, so anyway, I think she's great. I think she is really great. But unfortunately, the show was canceled because it sucked and no one watched it. So that's...
So there you go.
But that's how hard anything about this... This is someone filming a 4x3 regular-sized TV, like, with their phone or video or camera. I
checked.
Because
I had this on VH. I recorded her special. I love her special.
Wow. She's great. I just saw her that she was at a fun wake of Gary Shandling's at the time this recording was. Gary Shandling used to have like, hey, let's all these comedy people meet up for a basketball game. And so they did a kind of memorial basketball game without him, and it was all the people he'd do it with regularly, including Kathy Griffin.
It is.
One of four women there, by my count.
It is nuts how many times people have tried to make a counter SNL programming and never succeed. Yeah. And it's like,
never.
Really? I guess Mad TV is the most successful.
It is the most successful.
That show is
shot.
Shit. Shit! Sometimes.
Deserve competition.
Go back to your werewolf game.
SNL deserves competition. I love sketch, and I wish somebody was still doing it on a weekly basis on a network.
We're going to make a role-playing game about octopi.
I am
we're all
going to
dress up as octopi.
Octopus, the
You can call it Never Pussy.
take like video games, the serious subject. Very quickly, no particular big release. Last episode we talked about Resident Evil released this week, 20 years ago. Well, the prior week. But real quick for games, somewhere in this month, April 1996, Eidos obtains Center Gold, which contains Core and U.S. Gold. Core developed Chuck Rock Genesis game, Super NES game, but eventually the Tomb Raider series, up to and including Angel of Darkness, which is awful.
Yeah.
Eventually, like 96 is pretty close to the release of the first Tomb Raider.
Yeah, 96 at this point, Tomb Raider 1 is getting very close. That'll follow with 2, 3, Last Revelation.
Huge game changer.
Yeah, and so...
And Core, and it's weird.
Yeah.
It's only recently have I not associated their name with the Tomb Raider series.
Yeah, Crystal Dynamics took over and is
they've
still...
They've been doing it longer, I think,
yeah,
at this point.
I love the Crystal D.
So people split from Core and Eidos.
Where's my Pandemonium sequel?
And they formed Rebellion, who made a Bethesda game called Rogue Warrior, which starred... I forgot the guy's name.
Mickey Rourke.
Well, Mickey Rourke was the actor, but he was...
Machado?
He was the voice of like this Soldier of Fortune guy who... And I met him in the desert. So, in 2006, so September, no, October.
Oh, Marcinko.
Marcinko, that's the guy.
Yeah, a real-life Black Ops dude who then wrote a ton of books about how cool Black Ops dudes are.
Yeah, so I met him. We went out in the desert. Bethesda took a bunch of people out in Vegas in the desert to shoot a shitload of guns. And then the game was then delayed for years. It didn't come out till like 2009 or 2010. So it took 3-4 years for this thing to even come out. It wasn't good even when it finally happened. But
no,
I just wanted to go out with this segment playing a song from the end of that game, Rogue Warrior, because it is Mickey Rourke rapping and cussing up a storm.
Yeah.
So this is Mickey Rourke from Rogue Warrior, who was made by Rebellion, which is made up of people of Core, who was obtained by Eidos this week in April of 1996. Jeez. When we come back, what happened this week in 2006?
Hope you assholes like fireworks. Ooh! Fucking copy, keep getting in my way. No surprise, motherfuckers.
Happy fucking birthday.
That's right, 99, you sweet piece of shit. Enjoy the ride, cocksucker. Have a nice trip. Boom time, baby. Trick or
tree. Looks like a party, come on. I got places to go and people to meet. Assholes are everywhere. Fuckers are out in force. Hi-hoo, hi-hoo, this fucker's gonna blow.
Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea. This is Diana's Classic Corner. We talk about movies from even further back in time this week, see if there's anything classic worth watching. And we have a special guest this week because fun coincidences and stuff. He happened to be in town when 75 years ago this week, Marlene Dietrich starred in The Flame of New Orleans. And who happens to be in town this week but my brother Jeff, who also is in New Orleans.
I'm also a flame of New Orleans, I would say.
I didn't want to call you that, you know, just in case that's a derogatory term. Are you reclaiming flame?
Yeah, we'll claim anything in New Orleans to be our own, for sure.
Good for you. That's very brave of you. so, how do you feel about Flame of New Orleans from 1941? Would you recommend it?
I would not really recommend it unless you're a real deep Marlene Dietrich fan.
Yeah.
It's not very New Orleans, in fact, at all. It's very French.
It really played like a French farce of some kind.
Which makes sense. It was directed by a French man. It had actually some interesting little direction, had a little bit of interesting sort of choices in terms of moving the camera and all that. So if you're deep dive into 1940s Hollywood direction, but other than that,
the basic plot was that Marlene Dietrich is pretending to be a coquettish little countess, but actually she's, you know, Marlene Dietrich, and she's a gold digger, and she's trying to con a guy into marrying her, but she's also sort of in love with this pirate guy. And there was a nice scene where they went on a carriage ride through the rolling hills of New Orleans. That's a thing that happens.
Yeah, we have a lot of topography down in the swamp. It did not, you know, New Orleans looks surprisingly like Southern California.
It's
very convenient that way.
Okay, well, I guess I'll skip along to 50 years ago this week. We got two movies coming out. The Singing Nun with Debbie Reynolds. I am not going to recommend that, even though I love Debbie Reynolds and nuns and singing. But definite recommend this week, April 6, 1966, 50 years ago this week, Django, directed by Sergio Corbucci. This movie freaking rules.
It's pretty amazing.
If you saw Django Unchained, you remember that there's a scene where Django is standing at a bar with a guy with a foreign accent, and he says, "My name's Django, D is silent." That guy he was talking to is Franco Nero, the star of the original Django movie. It's just the best spaghetti western setup ever, in that he's just dragging a coffin through the desert to a town. Who's the coffin for? What's in the coffin? Who is this guy? What is he doing? I don't know, but a lot of fuckers are going to die because of it, and it's pretty freaking awesome. So I will recommend Django. And that's it for this week's Classic Corner. Stay classic.
He's a 21st century man in a 14th century land.
It is the year 1328.
He says that way.
Prepare for a feast.
What is that?
Food.
His roadkill.
Prepare for a fight.
You damn near ran me over.
Do you mock me?
You mock me.
Prepare for a first.
These hands, I make fire.
We have fire.
Martin Lawrence.
Ooh.
Black Knight. Rated PG-13.
Y'all really know how to make a brother feel welcome.
Shonda Paul, some give it to, some give it to, some give it to our girls. 5 million and 40 naughty shorty, baby girl, all my girls, all my girls. Shonda Paul say, well, woman, the way the time cold, I wanna be keeping you warm. I got the right temperature for shelter you from the storm. Hold on, girl, I got the right tactics to turn you on. And girl, I wanna be the papa, you can be the mom. Oh.
Sean Paul, everybody, bringing us in with Temperature, number one this week, 10 years ago.
Oh, I don't understand you kids and your music from 10 years ago.
That song, that was a huge song, even I remember
it. Yeah. I don't remember it.
Really?
No.
Man, that song
was
everywhere.
Were you not in Vegas for the 10 years after that song came out?
I probably was, but it just fell into the background noise of Vegas stuff. Oh, guys, we have a different voice on here and
we
not
do.
A woman?
Dave.
Hello.
Cheap Podcast's Dave Rudden joined us. We had to Inside Baseball record different times. And so Diana stepped out also because of what we'll be discussing. And she's like, I don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
But this
anime.
Is anime all day. This is 2000.
This is the year it was declared a mistake.
Yeah, so we've now moved on. This is April 1st through the 7th in 2006. New albums this week again. Temperature by Sean Paul brought us in. New albums this week from Daft Punk, a compilation album, as well as a new Morrissey album with songs such as You Have Killed Me.
You Have Killed Me.
And Dear God, Please Help Me.
Dear God, please help me. It worked again.
Everybody's Morrissey.
New album.
Clown, fucker, clown,
fucker.
That's a Dana Gould joke.
November Spawn to Monster is my favorite. As a birthday in November, it means something extra to me.
Yeah.
Flaming Lips' new album, Bubba Sparks, The Gorillaz. Pink had a new album as part of her I'm Not Dead tour.
What?
She should have another one of those.
Just
it's and the 10th anniversary, Pink. You need to do it again.
Yeah. And the new and an album from Rascal Flatts, which has the song that I know, the only song I know from them, which is What Hurts the Most.
Actually,
you know what hurts the most? That song's 10 years old.
Yeah, I think I bought that Gorillaz album. I love their first album so much.
It was good.
That second album, I don't like it as much. It was just more, it was a little weirder. Maybe it was because I just wasn't into a song with Dennis Hopper doing a monologue over it. But I didn't like that second album as much.
What was like the hit off of this album? Feel Good?
Yeah, I think it was Feel Good. No, wait. Was that from the, it's all a mix in there. I remember the video.
Good? Is it Gorillaz?
Yeah.
Second album.
Feel Good. Second album.
Feel Good Incorporated.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the one where they're like on a flying house.
Yeah.
That was the animated story of it.
Ah, important to note, that's what was confusing me. Demon Days came out in 05, mm-hmm. but this was Demon Days Live at the Manchester Opera House, a DVD that came out in the US this week.
Man, if you weren't there to see all those cartoons play, missed out, man.
Didn't they? That's how they would do it. Play live.
They project. Like, I think that the band members would be behind a screen, and they would project the band members.
Yeah, in front. Nice. They would do new animation from the creator of Tank Girl.
Ah, that makes sense.
Jamie
Kennedy.
Jamie Tank Girl. But yeah, this released April 4th, 2006. So, man, the idea that a Gorillaz thing that I know is 10 years old. I guess Clint Eastwood know that's even like,
I mean,
that's
like older.
15 years.
It is not your fault. They're 14. Not very quick with an album.
Yeah. Movies this week. Ice Age Meltdown is number one.
Scrat!
Scrat is killing it. Benchwarmers with Rob Schneider.
I bet Dave has watched this.
I have. Mm-hmm. Redbox. No, that's a running joke, but that is very pre-Redbox, but I just remember... Yeah.
This is the first movie Adam Sandler was too good to star in.
Yeah, and it was one of John Hader's...
Hader, Rob Schneider, and David Spade.
One of his first post-Vote for Pedro.
Yeah, so...
Napoleon Dynamite.
I was very... I was like, he is hilarious in Napoleon Dynamite. I'm going to check out this movie, and yeah, it was a... It is a B-tier Sandler movie where it's like Adam Sandler's company is making this, but he won't even be in it.
Mm.
He doesn't. It's like Grandma's Boy level where it's like this movie
is a favor.
Not,
it's a favor, and it gets his friends paid.
It's
including
not a favor. He just signed a lucrative contract with Happy Madison.
No,
and has to
crank
out shit.
I mean, it's a favor to people like John Lovett, sure,
but it's about baseball.
Yeah,
it's about
bad baseball players.
John Lovitz is a manager of a team who he feels bad for the kids who never get to play, and so he wants to make a team for all the losers, and that includes David Spade, Rob Schneider, and John Heater, along with a bunch of other misfits. And could you believe this ragtag group of weirdos could beat the preppy kids from across the street?
I mean, I get that this movie has to come out every 10 years. I understand.
It's an intentional throwback.
Sure. I understand.
But
also out this week is Friends with Money.
That's a Shirley MacLaine film where she finds out that the... No, that's not it either.
Bad.
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston movie about...
No, but yeah, but she's... There's one of them where she's in it with Shirley MacLaine, and they find out that Shirley MacLaine was the inspiration for Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate.
Yes.
But that's not this.
It's a different
that's
film.
Not the movie we're talking
Jennifer
about.
Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston, Catherine
Henry,
Kruger.
We need you to know how right he almost was.
These are all of the women that, like, if I was about 10 years older, I would have found the hottest in the 90s.
Joan Cusack, Catherine Keener.
Yep. Frances McDormand, yep.
Tim Sharp.
Oh, Tim, totally.
You would have found Joan Cusack that attractive. Really?
I thought she was.
Dude, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, sure.
Hey, she was on Saturday Night Live. That's that goes a little bit further in my book.
But yeah, no one saw it. Let's see.
But Benchwarmers, I have a weird memory of seeing John Heater at an E3, like two or three years later. And I was like, oh, I should, there's a Napoleon Dynamite. I should say I'm a fan. But then I always have this thing where, like, if I'm going to say hi to a celebrity, I'm not going to say that I love your most popular thing because everybody says that. So I stood there.
Got two things.
I stood there for, like, just dumbfounded for, like, 2 or 3 minutes on the E3 show floor, like, what is the baseball movie? And then I was like, wait, what is the ice skating movie? And I forgot. By the time I remembered them, and this is like pre-iPhone days, so I'm like,
Blades of Fury.
He's gone.
Yeah, I would never have got the
Blades of Fury. That's
movie.
Actually a really good movie. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, good's as far as I'll go with it. It's not great. It's good. Yeah, Dave, you got
glory.
The... Dave,
glory.
You're
on fire, brother.
Right. But, yeah, Dave, I learned that tip from Mick Foley. He said that that's how you have to – you got to go with the second most known thing if there's a third most because then they'll know you're a real fan.
Yeah.
So out this week is a movie I inexplicably did see, which was Lucky Number 11.
Yep, I saw that too.
Which a coworker – because, again, at this point in 06, I was working at Future and we didn't really know everybody too well, but we would occasionally hang out a little bit over the weekend and – two of us lived in the East Bay, so friend Gabe, who's been at now Ubisoft for almost eight years, probably 8-9 years at this point, working on Assassin's Creed stuff. But he and I went there and saw this movie, and for years after it, I kept trying to remember, what was the movie I saw with Bruce Willis and, like, two people live across the street from each other and, like, are warring with each
Josh
other?
Josh Hartnett, right?
And it's Josh Hartnett, but it's, like, Bruce Willis, or not, Morgan Freeman and maybe Ben Kingsley. It's about two different, like, rich, angry, bad guys who are trying to get at each other. Two feuding crime lords. And, like, just this petty back and forth between the two. And for years, I was like, what was that movie?
I mean, they gave it a title that is kind of hard to forget.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the main character's name, I'm guessing.
Wait, Ryan Reynolds is in this too, right?
It's Josh Hartnett.
Oh, Josh Hartnett. What Ryan Reynolds film am I thinking?
I don't know. But stop remembering other movies.
I'm doing bad.
This is a whole other show. If what movie is Henry thinking of?
No, if you want to know what has happened to Josh Hartnett's career in 10 years, he goes from being one of the stars of a major motion picture to the lead on a Showtime show.
Yeah. I mean, we have Channing Tatum now. We do not need Josh Hartnett. Yeah.
That's true.
He's bigger, buffer, better, funnier.
You could say that about Kevin Spacey, though.
Mm.
Like, now he's a lead on a Netflix show.
Yeah, but
like,
the biggest Netflix show.
I guess.
You know what the biggest Showtime show is?
Shameless?
Nobody does. It's Showtime.
And also with Monique and Fat...
Oscar winner Monique.
Fat Girls.
Yeah.
You can guess how both of those are spelled.
I thought that was a Wayne's film.
P-H and with a Z at the end,
yes.
Baby.
Nice. With Monique and Take the Lead with Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, that's, I guess... What if personal... No.
Is this a...
Fuck it.
0 for 5?
God damn it. Okay, what's the... Like, let's just put together the film Joko's trying to make.
You should go lie down.
What is the Edward James Olmos film where he teaches math?
Lean on Me. Or, no, Stand and Deliver.
What? It's Stand and Deliver, but with dancing.
Mm.
That's the joke I was going to say.
About Take the Lead?
About Take the Lead. It is about a ballroom dancing guy who goes to an inner city school and teaches kids to listen by teaching them dancing. They're like, I know how to dance. No, let me show you ballroom dancing. I'm Antonio Banderas. And then he does it.
I should God not have damn. Googled Fat Girls on my phone. That's not a good idea.
No, man. I mean, you got it right there.
Yeah. My brain. God.
Yes, Monique, Raven Goodwin, Jimmy Jean Lewis, 2006 comedy film with Monique. That's all I could possibly say about it.
I mean, if I'm going to search for that, I use Curvy Girls. It's a nice thing to say to Google.
TV this week in 2006, we have a few things that actually is why Dave is here.
Ah.
Yes. Smoking Aces was the film I was thinking of with Ryan Reynolds.
Lost. Yeah. Wait, oh, I was joking. Was I correct?
No, well, first off, on April 1st, there was the WWE Hall of Fame for 2006, which was notable for two things.
Wait,
one,
hold on. How many criminals and dead people are in among the inductees?
Many. well, first off is, number one is Bret Hart, and it was a major deal because in 2006, Bret Hart had only returned to make a deal with WWE to make his own DVD because WWE said, we'll make a DVD that shits all over you if you don't work with us on it. And so he said, fine, and I'll even show up for the Hall of Fame induction, but I will do nothing else because I hate you and I'll never be on TV again. Which stayed true for what? Till 2010?
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's weird. Yeah, like on the WrestleMania show, Howard Finkel says, like, and now the Hall of Fame inductees, but first Bret Hart did not feel comfortable attending this event. And it's like, well, that's throwing some shade, man. Like,
well, I liked on his...
Yeah, just
Beaver. But I also like that in his acceptance speech, like he crapped on Hogan, he crapped on the clique. Mm-hmm. He did it all. It was great. Like I especially loved. He talks about how Hogan, he's one to stir up some shit, and then they shoot to Hogan. He's just like, oh man.
Who else was in this Hall of Fame?
And also Eddie Guerrero, who had passed away just a matter of months earlier. And he
is kind of crazy. Like he was inducted 10 years before the same week that Sasha would wrestle.
Yeah, wow, yeah. And it was a huge deal. He was inducted. It was quite a tragedy, the first of many to befall WWE in the mid-2000s. And what's also sad about it is, and while you won't see the induction talked about on TV, is he was inducted by his three best friends in the company: Chavo Guerrero Jr., his brother slash cousin, Rey Mysterio, and Chris Benoit. Yeah. And, Chris Benoit, who 14 months later would murder his wife and child.
And himself.
We're getting to it, baby.
But, yeah, so that was the big deal out of that Hall of Fame.
Well, there was also Sensational Sherry, who would die, I think, within a few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, within a couple years. And she was great. She called Macho Man a psycho on stage.
And Vern Gagne, who killed someone at his nursing home. He had dementia, so there's a...
And so he shot on a 90-year-old man.
So he pushed a guy down who was like 90, and he just turned to dust.
Did he just put him in a sharpshooter?
From what I read about it, he was not charged.
An old man who was still in really good shape, who with dementia got scared and shoved down a very old man and killed that very old man.
Oh my God.
But in happy...
Imagine being a nurse in that nursing home having to try that. Yeah. Vern killed somebody. Grab a bedpan.
You know what I mean, Vern?
In happier news on April 1st, Jack Black hosted the Kids' Choice Awards for Nickelodeon. Yep. This is his cute little video he did.
This is his Smooth McGroove version of...
This is very Nickelodeon, though. I don't know how they made
it. But it's also Jack Black. This is when Jack Black was kind of as Disney-fied as he was going to get, because he had recently starred in...
Wait, did he have Lick-A-Titty in the middle of that?
I don't think so. Whoa! I heard Lick-A-Titty too! Hold on, I'm writing my congressman.
Hang on. I gotta hear this unobstructed, man.
I heard Lick-A-Titty.
Oh, anybody can scat.
Anyway.
That video is so bizarre because he's got that haircut that he only had for one movie, which is Nacho Libre.
His Nacho Libre haircut. Yeah. He was otherwise known as
my hair.
He was as big as he was going to be with kids that time. April Fool's Day at 8. Hosted by Jack Black.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I love Jack Black. The only other notable thing is that this was almost the first Kids' Choice Awards where no celebrity got slimed, but Robin Williams stepped up and he was like, you know what? Slime me, baby. And he did it, so it still was an Kids' Choice Awards where somebody got slimed, which was taken from a previous thing we talked about. You can't do that on television. On April 3rd, the Florida Gators won the NCAA 2006 tournament 73-57. Losers.
No sports, no anime.
The Henry Rollins Show premiered on April 1st as well on IFC, which was a talk show hosted by Henry Rollins in his very gruff and unassuming style.
Yeah, about libertarians who lived.
Somehow, there was like a 6-month period where did he have a live album? He had a live album or something.
I think so.
He has a lot of spoken word albums.
Yeah, so I think I listened to one like 900 times.
Really?
Right before I moved to California. So really? I didn't know him before, and I've never listened to it since, but I have this 6-month period in 2005 where almost every day I listen to that.
For sure. He was touring in stand-up clubs, like maybe essentially like just talking, but not as a lot of jokes. Man. Just telling stories.
I just had Discovery. Jack Black hosted the Nickelodeon Awards show that year, but Nacho Libre was also produced by Nickelodeon Movies.
Oh,
that's
right.
Is collusion.
From the director of Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
Boy, Jared something.
It's all connected.
Napoleon Dynamite had What's-His-Nuts.
With
who
a
was
great
in the...
GBA game, which is 3 letters, 3 points, triangle, Illuminati.
And then on April 4th, there was the ESPN show premiered, Bonds on Bonds.
Yeesh. What the fuck is this?
All right.
This is Bonds on Bonds.
Almost at a spit take.
There's no better person to get it from than me, period. All that you read, all that you heard... I'll tell you the truth.
Take it from me.
I'll tell you what I go through, and I'll let you in my life.
My producer said, up the energy. I said,
speed it up,
nah, man.
No, no, don't
that ain't me.
I mean, we know you're a power hitter.
If only he could take
a
shortcut and make this interview faster. Hang on, hang on.
There's more?
Then you can judge me.
Then you can judge me. Yep, I'm Barry Bonds.
Stop! So now it's time for us to judge Barry Bonds.
This opening is practically Mr. Show skit.
Bonds, so what does he do? Talk to himself, his mother?
Well, no. All right, so in case you don't know, Barry Bonds is the home run king of Major League Baseball, still is on the record books, and he was on his way to breaking the record.
Yeah.
Playing for the San Francisco Giants, our local sports team here. Mm-hmm. And there was a ton of controversy because he was very obviously doing steroids.
Yeah, like, I obviously disconnected from the story, but I was really into baseball when I was like 9, had a ton of baseball cards, Barry Bonds being a couple of my favorites. And like, what? They accused Barry Bonds of steroids? That's not true. He's fucking great. I remember all these interviews, and he steps out into the camera. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
In 15 years, you are twice the size of your old self.
Man. Yeah, they hulked out, and he's having this late career renaissance, and people are like, man, what's his secret? Like, so, Dave, you're the resident baseball
soldier
fan,
serum.
I'd say. What do you recall about it?
I remember them announcing it, like the show, and just thinking it was weird that this guy who, yes, is probably doing steroids to have these late career gains is going to have a reality show where he reveals everything, and it didn't last that long from what I've...
Yeah, it lasted 2 months, and then there were problems between the star and the producers. Yeah. But I think Bonds on Bonds is part of this weird mid-2000s era of celebrities deciding they'll make their own reality show. We won't let the media mock us. We'll star it ourselves and own the story. Yeah. So Bonds follows, like, Britney Spears had that one with her and her dumb husband.
Mm-hmm. K-Fed?
K-Fed, yeah, sorry.
Recently had a birthday.
there was also the one with Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston that humiliated both of them.
We'll both die.
Yeah, Bobby Brown still hanging
still with us.
Oh, is he?
How dare he outlive Whitney Houston? I am pissed off.
He
that
made
man.
A decision, and I guess he's got to take control.
And so Barry Bonds did this one too, and he was doing a lot of the kind of emotionally disturbed things that somebody on too many steroids would do. And he was doing all these like weird things of like interviews and but not interviews, and then he would like cry and be like, "Why you guys judge me? Why you guys think I do it?" But just to give you the like idea of how much we knew at this time, like the Balco thing, mm-hmm. Bay Area whatever mm-hmm. thing, that's where he got his steroid hookup. His personal trainer was in jail at this point for steroids, and his defense was like, oh no, they gave me this thing, the cream and the clear, and you put it on your head, and they just said it was a supplement. I didn't know
I
it was
told
steroids.
Him not to
like,
sell it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like, oh, I didn't know. I didn't knowingly take steroids.
Yeah.
Sure. And it, as a baseball fan who loves Hammer and Hank Aaron, he was one of my favorites as a kid. I didn't see him as a kid, but he was the legend I love in baseball. Mm-hmm. Him losing his record to a guy that...
So he did lose his record.
Yeah. And it, so, yeah. This,
it took a while,
no
though,
idea.
Because so well, this is the beginning of the 2006 baseball season. He didn't break it till I lived in the city, 2007, like mid-2007.
It was August 7th, 2007, he would break the home run record, and then he would get 6 more by the end of his career, September 5th. Yeah. And in November of 2007, he would be indicted for perjury. Yeah. He would eventually, he'd get, like, probation, but he never did any jail.
I don't remember what was happening then, but why the fuck was it the U.S. government's deal to put steroids on trial and waste tax dollars?
They got to do something, and this is a very public thing. I mean, technically, it's an illegal thing. Now, also, I would say...
It's not illegal, though.
Okay, you're...
It is not illegal to have, possess, or use steroids.
Well, no, but for doctors to prescribe it, it is illegal. They're using...
Yeah, but, like, this is clearly like a fucking McCarthyist witch hunt for steroids over what?
Well, I'll say, for my stance, is that, like, I think those... I worry about the player's health. But if they know the health things and they want to do it,
you have seen then enough sports documentaries to know what this is doing to them.
And they also
every athlete,
and they also all do it. Like everyone does it. It's just how to get away with it and who does it.
Seen the documentary Bigger, Better, Faster, Stronger?
Yeah.
The whole thesis is like, fuck you. I can take steroids if I want.
Yeah.
No. Sure.
Yeah. The thing about steroids is like you don't literally just inject yourself and become stronger.
It's not a soldier serum.
Yeah.
You have like you have to do this in conjunction with a shitload of dieting and workouts to have it work properly.
Yeah, but it also
it is cheating.
And if you're willing to mutate yourself, aren't you the better athlete?
It's cheating.
Don't I want to watch
it? It's cheating in that it is against the rules of Major League Baseball, and he did a thing he was told not to do, and then gets to break the most important record in baseball.
I bet it was against the rules in baseball, the first guy to walk out there with a bat. Everybody else is out there whacking it with their wrists.
Hey, Chris, get mad at Bud Selig, man. I don't make the rules.
Fuck
okay?
you, Abner Doubleday. Take this to my grave.
But yeah, as a Hank Aaron fan, seeing him break it when it was just so clear, like everybody knew it, and I was mad at the Giants. I was living here at the time and I was just like, man, screw you Giants, you want to say the home run record was broken in your stadium and have it on all your advertising when you know he's cheating.
What was the difference between this record and then the Sammy Sosa
that's
Mark
single
McGuire.
Season record.
Yeah, single that's single season.
Okay,
yeah.
I see.
Oh, now it's even more boring.
Fuck? Hey, hitting a lot of home runs in one season is pretty impressive too, and both those guys total cheaters, like total cheaters.
But it's weird because like doctors prescribe steroids
give them to my dog when she is too itchy.
Well, then they would have told, if it was cool, they would have told people about it instead of denying it their entire career.
I'm trying to figure out, why, but other than like the federal government being like, hey, look, sports have to be this thing where everyone's it's a meritocracy, and it's like, if you have access to steroids that push you, like, that's not...
That improve you over other people, and they're not, they're banned substances.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they got Bonds over was perjury. It was like, what you said, Chris, it's not illegal, but when the government asks you, did you do steroids,
and
you
say... after Bonds, and like, why, who is...
You lied under oath to God.
Seriously, aren't we funding this?
I just think it cheapens the whole thing. I really didn't like it, man. And it just, I really hated coming here and seeing all these Giant fans who are just in total, total denial. They're just like, nah, who knows? You can't prove it. I mean, he said this, like, really?
Yeah.
So what does Bonds do now?
Nothing.
He was just hired, I think, this season as a hitting coach for the Florida Marlins.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So, and he was on his first Hall of Fame.
First, drink this.
Yes. Everybody bend over, and I'm going to put this needle in your butt.
He was in his first Hall of Fame bracket, but he was not ballot.
Yeah.
The voting for the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame is much different than the WWE Hall of Fame, which is just Vince McMahon likes you.
Yeah.
Not so up in...
Vince wants you to sign off on this DVD.
Dave, where's the Hall of Fame?
Cooperstown? Yeah, the Cooperstown Hall of
not
Fame.
Not so in Cooperstown.
Yeah, but yeah, you are literally so voted in by like press and all of that, and it's thousands of ballots.
Right.
And there is this thing that like no one's ever got 100% of the ballot. Like this year, someone got 99.9%. I forget who it is.
So how many home runs did he hit?
762, I believe, is the final count.
Oh,
and that
I see.
Is still...
Career versus single season. Never mind. I'm...
Career versus single season.
There's a good chance that Alex Rodriguez breaks that record. He's still playing.
Man, that guy fucking sucks, too, though.
Yeah, you're never going to have a not-steroids.
I know. I would have been fine if Ken Griffey had done it, man. Ken Griffey was having the hitting records, too, and he's at least not a douche. He had too many injuries.
He had too many great Super Nintendo games.
Dragged that serum and then his head got big.
Video games this week.
Oh, thank God.
Don't get excited. From Russia with Love.
I am excited.
Comes to PSP.
I am excited. This is. I love how many. How much bad information came out of GoldenEye, the game.
Up to and including
that James Bond was a franchise that needed to exist every year.
Probably
they're doing so poorly because Sean Connery isn't in them.
Yeah, so here's a clip of a making of about... So, From Russia with Love was a video game that had Connery reprise the role of Bond.
Yeah, the second Bond movie.
And they use
and
his
sign
likeness.
Sign up his likeness.
And they sign it. They license his likeness. And here we go.
I'm absolutely thrilled to be playing James Bond again.
May I help you?
A dry martini. Shaken, not stirred.
Having Connery in the game has affected the game's design in the fighting style. He was more
women.
Of a brawler. You know, he grabbed the characters and threw them to the ground.
It's just
such interesting to go back to the physicality of one-on-one.
It's just a weird, puff piece
woman.
That every time a celebrity is in a game, it's like, this really is the greatest thing I've ever heard of. What is it?
I appreciate this paycheck.
But yeah, it's this weird era of like this clean, like you said, cling to this idea that that James Bond is why GoldenEye blew up in the N64 days, and it's like, no, it's because
GoldenEye was like one of the highest selling games of all time up point, and it is baffling.
It's like,
but it I think someone showed on a spreadsheet how much it made, and it was close to like. What were the movies around like when GoldenEye came out? Like Titanic wasn't even out yet.
Yeah, not yet.
It made $1 billion Titanic. Like GoldenEye probably made $2 to $4 billion.
The movie didn't do that well.
The game.
Oh, the game.
Made a shitload of money.
Yeah, it sold like 4 million or something. Yeah. Some number like that at $60, $70
a piece.
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah, but every game publisher kept spending the money to get the Bond license.
Yeah, well, EA scooped it up.
They chased that dragon for fucking years.
EA scooped it up, did like everything or nothing, the like fake James Bond movie.
The fucking kart racing game.
Yeah, they did tons. And then Activision got it. And it's like, now we're going to remake a new GoldenEye.
Activision
it's like,
dismantled several great developers to make nothing but Bond games and then fired them all.
It's just such a weird, like, James Bond, it's like, that movie's not great, GoldenEye. And none of the Brosnan ones are particularly good. And I don't even like James Bond.
Rush to Love is great. I can see why they decided to do it.
This is them like, we're out of ideas. The Brosnan ones aren't doing it. What if we... Sean Connery, he's great. What if we did
a
game
with
him?
Well, this is also when EA was of the mind of, games are movies, and we'll hire actors to be them in the games, because like movies.
Did you know, Sean Connery is one of those few people who's like, I'm retired from acting. Like, yeah, sure you are, son. I'll see you soon as a DreamWorks lion. and like he stuck to it. And like, this is his last, his second to last performance.
What did he do?
It says he played Sir Billy, and a retired veterinarian living in remote Scotland. This sounds like a charity thing that like we never saw. But like before that, his last credit is from Russia with Love, the video game.
He probably recorded it in like 2004.
2005. His last film, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yeah. Sean Connery is in bad shape. If we ever get to see him, you're going to be so sad.
Yeah.
I think they have a lot of people whose job it is to make it
totally.
Sure we don't see him.
It is almost 15 years since you've seen this man in public. It's
crazy. It's the same with like Ronald Reagan, you didn't see him. Like they it would have been too humiliating.
But yeah, that's the end of the show.
Woo! Thanks, Dave, for coming in for Diana.
He pinched hit. Thanks, Dave. But yeah, you can listen more 30-20-10 every Thursday on Laser Time Network, lasertimepodcast.com, where we have at least a dozen other shows that you could listen to.
Exhausted.
I do VG Empire. It's a video game music podcast. Try to pick a series or a franchise that has some good music from games you know, and especially games that you've never heard of, like Dragon Slayer and Mr. Black, things like other things. But we recently did a bunch of Batman and Superman Genesis games and NES games, a ton of great music from games that a lot of them weren't great, but the soundtracks, like Japan top composers on most of those things. So you can check out that on VGEmpire.com.
That's a lot of fun.
Laser Time's a wonderful show, but I don't want to talk about that. Sure. I want to talk about somebody we brought up in this episode. John Lovitz. John Lovitz. You a big fan of John Lovitz? Don't answer. I know you are. In a little over a week and change time, you will be able to hear John Lovitz again in Talking Simpsons.
Oh, man.
TalkingSimpsons.com, people. Laser Time's chronological breakdown of every single Simpsons episode ever.
Just at the beginning of season 3. Good times, everybody. There's Cape Crisis, a comic book podcast I do every week on the Laser Time Network. We also do the Superhero Spotlight, where we give a long-form biography of some of your favorite comic book characters you might not know much about, like Punisher, Daredevil, Deadpool, Wonder Woman, and the history of Superman versus Batman. That's all on the youtube.com/LaserTimeNetwork. Check it out, baby.
And if you want to know what happened in wrestling this week, there's Cheap Podcast, the pro wrestling podcast. And I would be remiss if I'm on
302010. Okay.
Lost. Yes. Had an episode called Dave this week.
Set in Tallahassee, my hometown.
No,
I don't know.
It was not a great one. It was
lot of those.
Okay. you know what? But it was a Hurley-centric episode, and it was about this guy named Dave who he apparently was friends with at his mental institution, who started showing up in visions on the island.
Yeah, I do remember that.
But then it turns out that he wasn't even the person that actually existed at the mental institution. And also another person from the island was on that same mental institution.
Never addressed again.
And that was one of the rare plot twist that wasn't addressed
ever
on
again. This show but, is terrible.
You know,
remember when that ending, I just see it in my head. This is one of the dumbest things I've ever
75%
seen.
75% ratio of addressing.
Remember when Lance Reddick was in the show and then wasn't?
Yeah.
Are they still alive?
Hey, let's talk about X-Files mysteries. Some of those weren't solved, were they?
Hey, no, but the show's not remembered for its mythology. It's the freak of the week.
But anywho, yeah.
Oh, if Diana was here, she'd mention Vigigame Apocalypse, her husband's show.
Yes, and you can follow Diana on Le Ciné Nerd at Twitter if you want some classic movie suggestions like you hear in the breaks for Classic Corner. And that brings us to the end of the show, which includes birthdays this week.
Denied me the
Randy Orton.
Hey,
is a birthday along with
the
Eddie
Viper.
Murphy.
Whatever.
the hippopotams. Eddie Murphy, Robert Downey Jr., Pharrell Williams, Jackie Chan had a birthday along with Russell Crowe, Clark Gregg, Genuine Class, Hans Christian Andersen, Paul Rudd, Billy D. Williams, David Cross, Hugo, Amanda Bynes. Was born on this day, April 3rd, 1986. That's a long time ago.
1986,
30 years ago. See, now for the quiz. Born
mine's
in
30. Jesus Christ, that's scary.
Born in Nigeria, 1960.
1960.
He was a voice in Happy Feet and Babe. And then he was in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Oh, okay.
Hugo Weaving?
Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, there we go.
And then he was in this trilogy.
V for Vendetta. We talked about it on a previous episode of 302010.
V for Vendetta, more like B for Birthday.
He's the one guy who was like, I don't want any Marvel money. He's like, nope, no more Marvel for me.
Yeah, I was the Red Skull, and now I'm done with the movies. but that's it. Thanks for listening. And we're going to go out because I almost played it when we came in. You're going to hear a little bit of Rascal Flatts, What Hurts the Most. Get used to it.